This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange anytime. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at WashableSofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at WashableSofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.
Hello and welcome to a Throwback Thursday edition of Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennis in for Dave Schrader. Today's edition is a two-parter. We've got two different guests and we go all the way back 11 years to December 17th of 2006. In the first part of today's show, we'll be talking to demonologist Adam Bly, who you may remember from the very first season of Paranormal State. We'll talk to him about different things that he's done in the field of demonology and some different experiences that he's had. And then in the second part of today's show, we'll talk to Patrick Burns from Haunting Evidence, a show that you may remember from what's now True TV. And man, that's going back a long time. And we'll talk all about Haunting Evidence. I don't even know if some of you remember that show, but we'll go over that show. And it was really ahead of its day. Today we talk about how True Crime TV and even True Crime Tuesday is a huge show now. And really, it was ahead of its time. It took True Crime and combined it with Psychic Detectives. And wow, to think of it 11 years ago, that was really, really ahead of its time. If you brought that program back today, it would be quite huge. Maybe it's time for a revival of Haunting Evidence. So that's in the second part of today's program. So let's get into it. Here's the first part of today's program with demonologist Adam Bly here on Beyond the Darkness.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Well, good evening, everybody, and thank you very much for joining us here on the Darkness on the Edge of Town. We'll get into this evening's show. We're going to talk to our first guest. His name is Adam Bly, and as I mentioned, Adam is a psychologist. He's a demonologist. He's a parapsychologist. He's a rudimentary man. He's a Neanderthal man. What else we got going for him, Tim? I don't know. I feel like he needs a bigger, broader, like we need music bed underneath him.
He's a sanctified man?
Yes, he's a sanctified man. So we'd like to welcome onto the show Mr. Adam Bly. Good evening, Adam.
Hi, Dave. Thank you.
Appreciate having you with us. Now, you know, Adam, we got to meet 2 years ago out at Penn State at the UNIVCon 4 conference. And Your talks were the couple that I really wanted to go check out, and I was totally blown away by the talks, so much so that I've asked you to join me on the next couple of trips so that you can come out and talk and share these thoughts and ideas with our listeners and with fans of the paranormal. But we wanted to have you on the show for the people that can't make it out to these events so they can get a little taste of some really intelligent conversation about the paranormal. And also, I know that you've got your own agenda with trying to work with the church to try to help people understand more about the awesome, cool field of demonology and how radical it would be to be a member of the Demonologist Club, right?
Well, not so much.
well, that's why we want to talk. So hopefully you can talk about that a little bit tonight as well. But let's start off. Give us a little background on Adam Bly and what you bring to the paranormal field and why, again, people should listen to your thoughts and opinions.
Well, I myself am not important at all. All I'm trying to do is bring some information from the field of psychology and broaden people's understanding of what is normal human experiences that might be not typical, but are normal, that get interpreted as the paranormal. There's many things that are misunderstood as paranormal and that people get very worked up and scared over that they don't need to be. And so that piece of the education, I think, is important. And I've just been lucky enough to have some background in psychology, and so I'm trying to bring that into the field because I saw that as kind of a missing piece. And then the other piece that I'm trying to communicate to the paranormal community and kind of the people and the fans and the people that are interested is some of the realities about demonology. And it's a word that gets thrown around a lot and I think is sometimes misunderstood and glamorized when it shouldn't be. As something cool or intense or something we should all run out and go do. And that's really not the case. And so I'm trying to educate people on that piece also.
Well, let's start off then talking, because this is what I was really interested in when I first met you, was the psychology of the paranormal and how so many of the things that frighten the living hell out of people are so easily explained by actual physical conditions that we may be having and actual mental, not problems, but mental connections and things that are going on in the brain that help you to discern these things that you consider to be paranormal. Now, you're not poo-pooing the whole idea of there being no paranormal. You do believe in the paranormal. You've seen it in action, correct? But a lot of the things people are so ready to accept as a piece of the paranormal and things that have terrified people for so long, hopefully you're here to shed a little light on that with us. And talk about that. Let's hear some of the top ones that you could talk about that people really seem to be frightened by that actually is a total, you know, regular occurrence that is normal for everybody.
Well, let me give you one. And before we start, let me just say that there are times where problems or situations are a combination of the normal human condition plus somewhat of a supernatural influence or element mixed in there. So I'm not saying that it's a black or white situation. It's, you know, sometimes has a little bit of shading to it. But let me give you the classic one, which is the old hag syndrome, which many, many people and many clients will call and say, you know, I wake up and I see this thing in the room. Or, you know, I had this really bad dream and I woke up and it was standing in the room looking at me. Or even more intense, I woke up and I was paralyzed and this thing came and it sat on the bed and it looked at me and it said, I'm going to get you, or whatever it might be. Many people don't understand that there's a natural mechanism in your brainstem that anesthetizes your motor system, basically paralyzes you while you're sleeping so that you don't act out your dreams physically and, you know, your legs move like you're walking in the bed when you're dreaming of walking. And sometimes the system will occasionally throughout your life basically go a little haywire, and you'll start to wake up, but your motor system will still be shut off. And so you'll essentially be laying there, paralyzed, only able to move your eyes, not able to scream. And the thing that gets mixed in with it is you're still groggy, still half asleep, probably still dreaming about whatever shook you awake, which is likely a scary thing if it jarred you awake. And so now you're laying there, having these strange thoughts. You're still half asleep, so you can't discriminate a good idea from a bad one, and you're paralyzed.
Right.
Then it's very common during that's what's called a hypnagogic state, which just means a twilight between sleeping and awake, very common to hallucinate and see whatever you're dreaming about. And so the hallmark to look for, Dave, is does it go away in 10 or 15 or 20 seconds? And if it goes away and you shake it off and you sit up, and yeah, you're scared, your heart's pounding, but if you realize that, wow, it was in that little window of time when my body was still waking up, it's very likely it was not anything paranormal.
Well, let me ask you, though. Now, the old hag syndrome is that feeling of something pressing down on you, paralyzing you,
mm-hmm.
and making your breath kind of go away from you, right? So,
yes.
I mean, what is causing that? Is that just the anesthesia that your brain is pumping out, and you're just waking up a little too quickly, so you're still not into full breathing mode and everything?
Well, there's two possible things that mix in there. The most likely one is what you just described. That is, the voluntary motor system is not operating. The involuntary, or the autonomic nervous system in your basal brain that runs your breathing, of course, your heartbeat's still going, you're still breathing. But let's say you wanted to take a deep breath right now, and you decided, okay, I'm going to go, and I take a breath. That's a voluntary motor response.
Right.
You're laying there paralyzed, and you're thinking, I want to scream. I'm trying to take a deep breath. I'm trying to gasp for air. But because that voluntary system is shut off, you feel like you're trying to open your chest and push your chest up, but it feels like you can't because that system is shut off. Your chest is just gently moving in its natural way. And your brain may interpret that as something pressing on your chest. The other piece that may be in play there for some people is a thing called sleep apnea, which is when we stop breathing while we're sleeping. And this happens to many, many people. Some people it's severe and it requires medical treatment. But this can also make you wake up. You essentially are laying there and you stop breathing while you're sleeping. Your body eventually goes into distress. You jar yourself awake because you're becoming anoxic and you need air. And you may jar yourself awake and feel like you're out of breath or you had the breath sucked out of you, but it's actually sleep apnea.
Okay. Well, now, the other thing that you said was that usually coming out of this hypnagogic state, which is at twilight before sleep or after sleep, is when this thing is seen more. Could it be? I mean, they've been able to prove at that point that your brain is more susceptible to certain things, right? They always say that if you want to learn, the best time to learn is right before you go to sleep and right when you wake up. So reading and trying to fill your mind with good things at those points are always good because your brain is in the right zone for that. Could it be, and I don't know how the brain works, but could it also be paranormal that is also the times that your brain is most receptive to see things that normally we have? You know, apparently ghosts are all around us, if you believe the experts, and the, children can see them because they're still innocent and know that they, not smart enough to know they shouldn't see these things. Could it just be that those are the points in time when our mind is still relaxed enough that we're allowing ourselves to see these things before we mentally dismiss them?
Possibly. And let me say that, over time, I've gotten the sense that it's more about you're relaxing, imagine you're sitting at home in a quiet room and you're able to really chill out and relax.
Right.
And somebody were to speak really softly in the corner of the room. I think you're more likely to hear them and hear what they said and notice that that's going on than when you're in the middle of your hectic day, this and that's going on, you're thinking about five different things, and I think the subtle signals, the subtle stimuli, are more likely to be lost because, in your own mind, you're like, you've got these huge lists of things to do and lots on your mind. And so I think part of it is that the background noise within your own mind and when your nervous system is calming down and you're getting ready to sleep makes you just not become more sensitive, but be less distracted by yourself.
Okay. Well, what are some of the other... if you could give us an example of things that people are usually frightened by that's just something physiological or something that is so normal that we just take it for a paranormal experience. Is there one other item that you can throw out there to maybe try to help people quell? So now I think you made people feel a little bit better when they go to sleep tonight. If they have that old hag system or syndrome going on, it's probably just that. So what you're saying is basically the dream is superimposing itself into the reality of waking state. And
yeah,
it's just that 1 second of time or that small window of time where reality and fantasy are mixing.
Yeah, and it's often can be, 10 or 15 seconds. The subjective experience of it can be longer because your sense of time is thrown off.
Right.
But it's generally quite brief. And the thing to do is just tell yourself, look, this is this is extremely likely this is a normal state, even though it's scary. I'm just going to wait it out. And just calm yourself and wait. And when you see that it lifts and you come back to normal, that, you know, after a couple times, like if you're a person that's prone to have this every night or every couple nights, after a couple times of just staying calm, you will learn to recognize the state earlier, and you will learn to calm yourself earlier, and it will become a lot less distressing, and then you'll just go back to sleep after it's over.
Now, is there something, and we'll kind of mix in a little bit of the paranormal side here and a little bit with your demonology side, if you do wake up and there's something standing there that doesn't belong there, that's obviously not a human that's intruded into your room, is there anything you can do immediately to protect yourself from whatever has entered your home?
You mean if it is actually something paranormal?
Right. I mean, is there something that you can do? You know, if I wake up and I'm trying, okay, Dave, calm down. What did Adam tell me? About 20 seconds, just relax. This is probably a hypnagogic thing, and I'm okay. You know, 30, 40, 50 seconds into it, this thing is still tilting its head and looking at me, making the predator purr. I mean, is there anything I should do at that point to, protect myself?
Well, sure. And you know, anything that I will say on the paranormal end comes from a Roman Catholic perspective. I'm Roman Catholic, and I work under church authority, and that's the way I address these things. So my response would be, in that circumstance, to do one or two things or both. Pray, and I always advise as a first prayer to use the prayer to St. Michael, which anybody can run a Google on and quickly find on the Internet. I suggest memorizing it for anybody involved in the paranormal field. St. Michael is an archangel that, from my understanding, of course, appears in the Catholic tradition, the Christian tradition, but also in the Islamic and the Jewish tradition. So he's an angel that many different faiths recognize. And that's a prayer of asking angelic beings to come help you. The second thing, and this is, a little more extreme, and I would only recommend it for people probably directly involved in the work, and that would be to use holy water. So I would be very cautious encouraging somebody to assume that something they saw in their room is something real in terms of it's a ghost or a demon. And I'd be really even more cautious to encourage them to start thinking that evil things are hunting them or harassing them or bothering them in their home, because that kind of thinking will cause you to have more nightmares and have more false experiences like this. So I'm cautious about it. But if I thought it was legitimate, I would say, hey, keep a bottle of holy water next to your bed. Say some prayers before you go to sleep, asking for God to help you get through the night peacefully. And then if something does show up, say a prayer to St. Michael and basically hold your ground. Don't be afraid of it. Don't trash talk it. Don't yell at it. Just pray to God for assistance.
Well, that's something I wanted to bring up to you, just as somebody that is does a lot of this based on faith and religion. And again, you know, I'm not trying to bring religion under fire on the show here at all. I just have a question I've always been curious about is the Roman Catholics, they have their idol, or not idols, their, what's the word I'm looking for here?
Saints?
Yeah, they're saints, they're, you know, Mary, all these people. If I'm afraid, why would I pray to St. Michael? Why wouldn't I pray to God and just ask for help right then and there? Is there a hierarchy? I mean, is it better to go to the? I would think if God's kind of running the show, he's the one I'd really want to go to. I don't want to have, Michael go get permission, or what if Michael's busy eating a donut or something when I call for help? I want to make sure I'm getting the guy with the power right away.
Yeah, and of course you're always free to pray directly to God. Part of that recommendation comes out of tradition, meaning we have many generations of exorcists and priests and laity that assist them that have learned through experience that this particular prayer is very potent and very useful in terms of getting quick help. And so part of that's just we've seen that it's really effective in practice.
Okay.
The broader answer to your question is, yes, of course, God is in charge of everything.
Okay.
And all of the angels are merely manifestations of God. When we pray to St. Michael, it's partly because in the Bible, St. Michael is the head angel that defeats the angels that rebelled. He's basically the general of God's army.
Okay.
And since it's angels that are really going to show up to save you, you're kind of asking the leader of the angels to dispatch somebody to come down and help you out. Now, of course, God can do the same thing.
Sure.
But we've just found that it's an easy prayer to memorize. It's really effective, and so therefore we recommend it. It's more based on experience.
So it's kind of like when there's a natural disaster, you don't call the president to bring in food and aid right away. You call the Red Cross.
Yeah,
right? It's kind of that, and then God, of course, or, you know, the president, of course, gives the permission of the Red Cross or whoever is in there to help out in the National Guard, and you know, is it? But you just go to the level that would be able to help you best. Is there a certain saint that I could pray to make sure that the shake machine works at McDonald's? Because it's always down wherever I go.
I'll look into that,
yeah,
Dave.
Please.
I promise I'll get back to you.
Because I've got to believe that's demonic interference, because I never can have a shake when I go to McDonald's, and it's really
getting
under my skin.
And I'm going to expedite that, I'm telling you.
Thank you.
We're going to get a letter to Rome drafted right away.
Dear Pope, could we please get an angel for the shake machines at McDonald's?
Yay.
Yes. All right, so now let's go in. Now, we've kind of talked about what we're doing here in the paranormal, and you've given some answers on that. Now, I would like to know, as we're transitioning into more of the demonology side here, and I know tonight's going to go by way too quick with you, and I'd like to, of course, have you back on again, and we can follow more into this.
Do you
believe that the shows that are out there, and I'm not trying to call, I know you and I are friends with guys that are members of all these TV shows and everything, but do you think that they've done more harm, in a sense, for inciting people into the field of the paranormal that people that shouldn't be there?
Well, Dave, from my perspective, yes. And in the sense of, a lot of the shows don't talk about the more serious cases and the dangerous cases that are out there. And that's partly because I think the networks don't want to put that hardcore stuff on TV because it's genuinely scary. I think people have a level of scared they want to be. But you start talking about the D word, and people get genuinely scared, and they don't want to hear about that stuff. And so I think what has happened is that there's kind of this fascination of like, well, you know, here's a mystery. Am I going to be around after I die? Are ghosts real? And can I go get a thrill of being scared for a second in a safe way? And I think that's the message that's come across, and so many young people are thinking, like, well, let me get some flashlights, and we'll form a paranormal group and go to my grandmother's house because it's haunted, and it'll be fun. Well, unfortunately, in reality, it's often not fun because the people that actually call us are people in genuine distress. They're in tears. They're afraid for their children. Their lives are being torn apart, and it's not fun. And unfortunately, the TV shows, and it's not their fault, I think it's more about the networks, don't educate the public on the seriousness of the bad cases. And so I think a lot of young people are going out there, and they're just kind of curious and exploring, and they think it's neat, but they haven't been warned that there are some real powerful negative forces. And don't misunderstand me. God is infinitely more powerful, and God is in charge of them. They are restrained and only act with his permission. So don't give them more credit than they're due. But they are dangerous. And if you're not called into the work by God to do this, to be around these forces, they can hurt you badly.
For the demonology side of things, people are getting involved. They think it's cool. It's extreme. It's, oh, man, if I'm going to do it, I want to be the team demonologist. First of all, what goes into becoming a demonologist? If I just read a bunch of books on demonology and I've studied demons, does that make me a demonologist?
Well, the short answer is no. It's a word that's really kind of hard. I mean, you know, strictly it just means study of demons, but that doesn't really just sum up what we do. First of all, there's no school, there's no degree, there's no way to really prove that you're legitimately a demonologist. What do we do? Well, you can read books. It's not going to prepare you because the verbal tradition of being taught by other people is where most of the real information is. So first off, if you read books, you're not going to know what you're doing. Most importantly, demonology is a calling. It's not a choice. If you want to be a demonologist, there's a problem. Nobody wants to go into a room and confront and meet pure evil and invite the backlash of that confrontation into their life. Anybody that wants to do that, there's a problem. And if somebody wants to do that because they think they're going to control the demon or get power from it, that's a lie. So, you know, first off, somebody has to ask themselves the question of, why do I want to get involved in this stuff? Why would I want, you know, to
exactly.
these things?
Yeah, and boy, I would, you know, that would be like the, you know, I don't know much about demonology except for what I'm beginning to learn from you and from what I've read in some of the books that you've recommended, but that's like the field, and I'm not, you know, trying to come off as a big pansy and terrified of everything, but that's like the field I would be least interested in because it seems to open up the doors to the most crap that could go wrong in your life.
Oh, absolutely.
So yeah. So now go ahead and give us a heads up. What all should go into the thought before you make this decision that demonology is your calling?
Okay. There's four parts to this. First, there's something that I call reciprocal discernment, and that's fancy language for you have to feel that God's calling you into it, and somebody who's already in the work that's, you know, pretty far along needs to also feel that God's telling them you should be involved. So it's not as simple as Adam says, oh, you know, I went to church today, and I really felt, you know, that God was saying that I should go out and try to be his instrument in helping these people. There has to be somebody else that says, hey, Adam, God's telling me also that you should be doing this work. So that's the first piece. You're called, somebody else is told. Second piece, you have to be supernaturally protected. And what that means is, basically, you go in these situations and you don't go crazy or end up dead. And I don't mean that in a flip, dramatic way. I'm being very serious. There are people that have been institutionalized semi-permanently, permanently. There's people that have died. There's people that have been severely wounded. God will protect the people that he sends into these situations. If you choose as a human to go in against a demon without being an instrument of God, without God's protection, you're a mere mortal facing a fallen angel, a supernatural entity that's way more powerful than you. So basically, there has to be protection. Then there's got to be efficacy, meaning you go into these situations and you actually do some good. It's not to say that, hey, Dave, you went in that room and there was that possessed person and you didn't go crazy and you left, but you had no effect on the situation. And, of course, you never do. It's God moving through you that has an effect. So the most important things are feeling the call, somebody else feels a call related to you. You're protected, and you have efficacy.
Okay.
And then you might say, well, wow, maybe I really should be in this work. Now, there's another piece there that some people in the deliverance field talk about. They don't talk about it so much in the exorcism field, but basically, if you feel fear when you go into these situations, and it's natural, Dave, to feel some skittishness, some fear, especially when you're facing a new situation, which is very common in this field. But if you feel overwhelming, wetting your pants fear, there's a problem because basically, it's weird, it's hard to describe, but God enables you to feel a faith and a sense of protection that lets you not really be afraid, even when things are getting crazy.
Okay.
And that's something that just happens for some people and it doesn't for others. Like, there's some people that have a healthy, normal response, which is, there's no way I want to do that. That's
right.
You're nuts.
That's,
you know,
right.
I would never do that. And that's a healthy response. And then there's other people that are like, well, you know, if I had to do it, I would do it. And for me, at least, that lack of fear partly comes from when you feel that call and you respond to it. I hesitate to say this because it's going to sound like I'm being dramatic or it's an ego thing, but it's not.
No, not at all.
Basically, your life is forfeit. Like, if you're afraid to lose your life, if you're afraid that they're going to kill you, then that fear will crush you because they certainly will threaten your life. And you do know that, you know, there have been cases where they've been allowed to kill people. And so you kind of have to get past that fear. And you have to basically give your life to God completely so that when you go in the situation, it's like, and the demon says, well, we're going to kill you tonight or we're going to kill you when you get home. You know, the response needs to be, well, if God's going to let you do it, do it. And move on and say, but, you know, but we're here to take care of what we're here to take care of.
Well, that removes a lot of their power, too, and you don't have that fear, that inert fear kind of built into you all the time if you have your faith that it's going to get you through it. When it's your time, whether the demon's going to get you or a taco from Taco Bell's
exactly.
You know, salmonella poisoning or something, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
So those are some of the elements of this. that need to be in place in your life before you should even consider going into situations where there's demons present.
Okay. So for the people that are getting involved now, I know it's dangerous, and you said you basically your life is forfeit to this field. Would you recommend Dave Schrader, father of six, to become a demonologist?
No, and I would be very suspect of you telling me that you feel God's calling you into demonology if you're already a father and have a family and children that are depending on you, because I would wonder if that's a trick, because there are people with families in demonology, and that is completely fine, and if they get to a point where they're stable in their work and they pray about it and they feel like God wants them to have a family, to have some normalcy in their life, some stability, that's one thing. But, you know, really after you're really experienced and you're stable, if you're like, hey, you know, I'm already a father and I've got all these kids and I think I'm going to go experiment, it's probably not good, because we do experience backlash. We do experience stuff showing up at our home, kicking our butt once in a while in retaliation for a case or trying to scare us before we go on a case. You get used to all that. But for me, I would be very hesitant to, in a sense, put my loved ones at risk for having to experience that.
And right, so because they will start to, they go after your, you know, your spouse and your kids because they know that that's your weak spot, right?
Well, only if God allows them to. So generally, family members are protected, just like the family members of possessed people are generally protected by God as innocent bystanders.
Okay.
So I would think it would be very unlikely a demon would be given license by God to come and hurt your children. I doubt that would happen. Now, if you got involved in demonology and you were conjuring demons, you were trying to control them, you were messing with them, then that protection from God very likely won't be present, and your family may get hurt. I think if it was Dave Schrader, as long as you were doing things in good faith and you said, I stumbled on this situation, I was in the middle of it, I don't want to be a demonologist, this isn't my thing, but suddenly, you know, I had to do something to save that child, I did it, I prayed to God, that's the last time I'll ever see this stuff, and I got out. A situation like that, I would think your family's probably safe. But if you overstep your bounds, I think you're putting your loved ones at risk. So, you know, that's a long-winded answer, but basically I'd be very cautious.
So for people out there that have family and friends and think they're strong enough, see, I do have concerns. I mean, you did a speak for us last week. you did a presentation for us at the Warwick, Rhode Island event that we did a few weeks ago. And it had such an impact that four people actually got up and left and told me that they didn't even want to do the paranormal investigation because they were too freaked out by the whole thought.
Mm-hmm.
Then there were a few people, and one of them is somebody I care for very deeply. She's a sweet girl, but demonology is something she's very into, and she feels she's empowered enough and strong enough to defend it, even though she has a family and children. And mm-hmm. I am concerned for her because I understand her conviction and faith in her own abilities, but again, like you say, you can't let ego be a part of it. It's got to be a power from elsewhere, not yourself. You can't defeat the demons.
Oh, no. No,
right.
All you can add to the equation is obedience. So, like I said before, if you want to do this, if you want to confront them, there's a problem there. Nobody wants to. You're called to, and you say, okay, people are suffering. God's revealed to me that why these particular people are suffering, and he's saying, you can go into that horrible situation and maybe do some good if you're obedient. But it's going to be really ugly, it's going to be horrible, and your life's going to be changed forever. You choose to do it not because you're like, I'm empowered, I want to do this, this is my mission. You choose to do it because you see suffering, and you know there's going to be a price tag associated, but you choose to be obedient. So it's not like you're fired up going in there. It's like, you know, I'm going to do this for God, I'm glad to do it, but I'm not excited. You know what I mean? It's not
definitely
cool. It's not cool is what I'm saying.
Okay. What can people do? You know, unfortunately, we've only got about 7-8 minutes left here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
What can people do to protect themselves from demonic attacks or demonic possession? What are things that we can do to look out for or to help protect our family and ourselves from it if we're interested in the paranormal?
Well, number one is get your spiritual life in order, meaning be very close to God. If you're a Catholic, make sure you go to confession, go to Mass, receive communion, read whatever, you know, read your Bible. If you're a different religion, assuming it's oriented towards good, read and meditate on whatever you're doing. Align yourself with God. Pray a lot. Pray for protection. And pray for God to tell you if you've gone too far, you should not go further. Learn the prayer to St. Michael. If anything ever comes around you or you feel a bad presence, say that prayer. If your religion involves holy water or holy symbols, put a holy symbol up in your home in plain view where you sleep. Make sure it's blessed. You know, beyond that, you get into specifics under different faiths. You know, my approach is Roman Catholic, so those are that's where I would start with people.
Are there Lutheran demonologists? I mean, exorcists? I know there's Roman Catholic. You've got some for the Jewish faith, some for the other faiths. But are there Lutheran, Methodist, Presbyterian, Baptist exorcists that do this as well? Or is it only usually through the Roman Catholic Church that you find help for these kind of situations?
Well, most Protestant faiths do exorcisms, but they call it deliverance. And an exorcism, to be clear, is for when it's actual possession. Deliverance is when it's oppression or infestation, where it's not full possession. An exorcism is a formal ritual done when the demon's actually in the person. And by the way, that's free will. The person has accepted the demon, so they don't just come along and jump in you. There are a couple exceptions to that I won't get into for time. But by and large, it's a choice. Protestant faiths generally do deliverance work, which is basically praying and invoking Jesus' name to drive the demon out. An exorcism is a formal ritual.
Okay.
And that's generally only the Roman Catholics, generally.
Well, now you say you can't be possessed unless you've invited it in.
Mm-hmm.
How can you invite something like that in? So that how can we avoid doing that? I mean, is it something as simple as saying, damn it, I'm just never going to make the bills this month. Boy, I'd sell my soul to get, you know, something as canny or corny as we've seen in the TV and movies. Is that how it happens? Or is it messing with the Ouija board or talking to mediums or, you know, sacrificing your firstborn son? I don't know. What exactly are you doing to invite in the evil?
Well, it's a combination of you inviting the evil in and the evil being interested in you as a target. There's plenty of people that play with Ouija boards and not much comes of it. And then there's people that mess with Ouija boards or do spirit communication, and the demon, which, by the way, of course, poses as something nice and friendly, or your grandmother or an angel or a spirit guide until it's too late, comes and works its way into your life. They only show their cards that they're a demon at the last moment, right before they say, we'll cure your cancer and you'll live 10 more years, but you have to come with us when you're done, or we'll stop your house from being foreclosed, you'll be wealthy, you'll be fine with money, but you have to come with us when you're done. And
that really does happen.
Yes, and they come at you at your weakest point. When you want to save your child and your child is laying on that surgery table and they come to you and they say, we'll make that aneurysm not kill your child, but you have to give yourself up for it. They'll come at your weakest time.
Wow.
And I've had many people come up to me after talks or at conferences and they're like, you know, listen, this thing came to me, it spoke in my head as clear as day, it told me it was a demon, and it said, here's the deal, yes or no.
We have a question here, I'm sorry, a question here, we've got about 4 minutes left, but can you hypnotize, I know we've talked in deals, you've worked in hypnotism as well, and you were hypnotizing somebody to help them with another issue when a possessed spirit came out. Now, I think it was in The Exorcist, wasn't it, Tim, where they hypnotized the demon inside Reagan. And I know this is all flash for Hollywood, but can you actually hypnotize the demon that's inside of the host?
No, I really doubt that. Nobody can answer that question clearly because we just don't know enough about the internal states when somebody's possessed. But my guess would be absolutely not. Generally, when we hypnotize, and many people have tried hypnosis with possessed people in various contexts, basically the demons just come out and they say, you know, get out of here, we're not going to even let you do this, and it just turns into a confrontation, just like any other confrontation with the demon.
So again, if you have background in hypnosis and somebody calls you in, you shouldn't be messing with this stuff either.
No, it's extremely dangerous to hypnotize somebody who's possessed because you're basically going to force the demon to come forward and you're going to end up in a nose-to-nose confrontation with the demon. And unless you're equipped to do that, and that's very special, meaning you better be a priest that's involved in the work or a demonologist who's really experienced and can handle that, you're going to have a peck of trouble.
How about the fact that I've been married twice? Does that give me any strength?
Mm,
no.
Perhaps.
I mean,
perhaps.
I've come up against evil quite a bit in my life. Hey. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. It's not the women, it's the six kids, Adam, I swear. They're all evil. All right. Well, you know, I appreciate you giving us the insights on the different things here. And, of course, we've only scratched the surface.
Sure.
Now, you've got an article up at about demonology and such at Rosemary Ellen Guiley's site. Is that correct?
Yeah, basically, yep.
Okay, so if people go to visionaryliving.com, I believe it is, and I'll put up a link for that as well. Is that something that's up for anybody to go and read a little bit more about?
Sure.
And
sure.
Do you have any more literature up, or are there any books that you recommend people should take a look at?
Yeah, the best book I would say, it's a recent one called Interview with an Exorcist, and it's written by Father Fortea in Spain. He's currently the only person that's done a PhD on exorcism. He's a Roman Catholic priest. He's a wonderful person, and I would recommend reading that book as a good start.
Okay, and that's Interview with an Exorcist.
Yep.
And it's by Father.
Yeah, Fortea.
Fortea, F-O-R-T-E-A. T-E-A, okay. And, so you can look that information up. And, again, we'll put a link up at our site for you to go take a look and read Adam's article about demonology. And then if we could also make a mention, Adam will be joining us on the Queen Mary trip, which is coming up January 14th through the 17th. And he's astounding to see in person and to see some of the stuff that he's able to share with you and teach you. It was so cool at the beginning of your talks to hear, you know, how many people here are interested in the demonology aspect of it. And so many people raise their hand and, oh yeah, this is, and how many people at the end of the talk, when you said, okay, who's ready to sign up? How many people had their hands so far down, you know, that there was no interest at all. And again, it wasn't even that you were scaring the hell out of them. It wasn't, you weren't showing flash and dazzle and green pea soup and head spinning and, you know, names being clawed on your chest. It's just speaking of the potential dangers and the things that you have to go through as being a real demonologist that you have to watch out for. So
yeah.
Adam will be with us on the Queen Mary, and that's January 14th through the 17th. You can look up information on our website there. You can also go. Now, can they contact you at your studio for your artwork that you do as well?
Maybe, but I'd rather just limit this to helping people with the religious and the paranormal stuff. But,
okay, well, I thought if you'd like to promote your artistic venues as well. He will be at the events offering up light paintings, which are amazing, that he does, and he will take you as a subject and turn it into just beautiful artwork. So you'll be able to get that at the Queen Mary and at the Stanley events as well. Adam, thank you very much for spending the evening with us. I'm sorry it went by so quickly. Let's have you back on again here in the future, okay?
Have a peaceful night.
You too. Thank you very much. You're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'd like to thank you all for tuning in. We will be back at the top of the hour when our next guest is Mr. Patrick Burns from the TV show Haunting Evidence. Stay with us. We'll be back with more of the show right after this.
Beyond the Darkness.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the show. Our second hour is about to kick off, and as you just heard, we're talking to Mr. Adam Bly about demonology and parapsychology. And we're just playing a commercial for our Queen Mary event coming up. And as it would just so happen, one of our next guests is also going to be joining us on the Queen Mary. If you have Court TV, you've probably watched him on that show, Haunting Evidence, which is an amazing show. They've taken a paranormal investigator, Patrick Burns, who's our guest, and two psychic sensitive medium profilers, John Oliver and Carla Barron, and brought them together. They go in and they try to reinvigorate a cold case file, which means it's a case that has gone cold They haven't gotten any clues. They don't really know who the killer is or what happened in the case. So they're looking for any outside help. So they've actually called in these three experts to come in and they go in and try to reinvestigate and maybe open up a few new clues to help out with the cases. Our guest this evening is Mr. Patrick Burns. Good evening, Patrick.
Hey, Dave. How are you doing?
Doing great. Thank you very much for joining us again this evening. Appreciate having you back.
Always a pleasure.
So let's talk a little bit about haunting evidence. Now, again, it's Wednesday nights, correct?
It's Wednesday nights. We are off the air until the new series, premieres, which will be June 13th. So everybody has to hold tight for about another 6 months or so. If they've never seen the show and they'd like to see what it's all about, though, they can go to hauntingevidence.com or courttv.com/haunting. And they can actually watch the premiere episode from season one right on the website there.
Awesome. And again, like I said, it's basically you and John and Carla going out to cold cases and trying to reinvigorate and get some life back into them, right? And hopefully show some detail.
It's kind of a new twist on a crime show, investigative process in getting some answers for these cases. Some people have compared it to Unsolved Mysteries meets Psychic Detectives.
Sure.
Sort of got a similar feel to that.
And right now you're in the middle of filming season two, correct?
Yep, I just got off the road. On Friday I got home here. We have five episodes for season one in the can, and that's going to do it for 2006. We're going to pick it up again the second weekend of January, and we'll just pick it up from there and do the remaining episodes for the next season.
Well, the question I got to ask, because you know everybody out there wants to know it, have you guys been able to solve one of the crimes yet, or do you think that you've gotten really good information and helping the police close in on a character, or are you not at really liberty to say because that is an ongoing investigation for the police and you don't want perhaps the killer to know that you guys are closing in on him?
Well, the law enforcement, they're generally very hush-hush with what they tell us in terms of the show, because it is, as you said, an ongoing investigation. They're open cases. There have been some very interesting new clues that have been uncovered by John and Carla in a couple of the cases that we have worked, that law enforcement has been sort of had to stop and say, hey, wait a second, they're really onto something, because we didn't publish any of these clues publicly. There's no way they could have possibly known this. So our experience with law enforcement on the show, Dave, has been...
Jay,
kind of
Dave, mixed. Whatever you want to call me, Paul,
whatever.
It's fine.
The Dave. Okay. The Dave. The show has been mixed. Some law enforcement are, very, very eager to work alongside John and Carla and see what they come up with. And then others are just complete cynics. We don't believe in this stuff. Yet we'll appear on the TV show, just to do our job and give you some background info on the case. So none of the cases has officially been solved yet. But I remind everybody that I tell or I talk to rather about the show. I say you got to realize that we've only been filming now for just over a year. These are still very much cold cases, and in instances where psychics have become involved in these cases, they may have been involved with these things for years before they finally got closure. Law enforcement certainly is in no hurry to rush to prosecute. There have been a number of instances in the past, JonBenet Ramsey being one, where they thought they had an open and shut case, and they botched their investigation, by being too hasty. So I know from experience they're very interested in some of the details that John and Carla have been coming up with, but I just want everybody to sort of be patient, and we'll see what happens in the next few months.
Now, have they ever considered having one of the mediums confront a potential perp, who they think may be it? Do they ever have them kind of do a psychic lineup, if you will?
Yeah, I think the problem that we run into there is from a legal perspective.
In most of these cases that we've done, they don't even have an official suspect. The one exception to that that comes to mind is the case of Julie Williams and Lolly Winans. Those were the two female hikers in Virginia on the Appalachian Trail that were brutally murdered at their campsite. They have a suspect in behind bars who has assaulted other women in the Appalachian Park, and there's good reason to believe that he was in the park at that time, but they just haven't been able to pin it on him. And John Oliver has said he was like, you know, I'd love to go and meet with the guy and just look into his eyes, talk with him for a little while. John seems to think that he could be able to tell us one way or the other if this guy was really guilty just by looking at him. But of course, again, there you run into a liability problem. You know, you can't say, well, John said he did it, so he did it. It's a really sticky situation. And
well, that's what I'm curious about. When they reopen these cases for you, Patrick, and they're letting you guys get all this information to try to help them get this. Now, let's say John goes to the murder scene and of Sweet Polly Purebred and finds out that it was Simon Barsinister that did it because he can see her in his mind and he knows these things. But there's no physical evidence tying Simon Barsinister to this site. There's no evidence of Simon Barsinister having been in this area, but he can give a dead-on, even a name kind of thing. How does that help on these cold case files? If they already thought, well, it might have been Simon Barsinister, but we have nothing to tie him to.
Right. They're very cautious about giving out specific names. They instead prefer to profile, give a physical description, and let law enforcement sort of pick up the pieces from there. You know, it is important to remember that psychic abilities have never been proven from a scientific perspective. So it's kind of fuzzy intelligence, if you will, in terms of its accuracy. You know, there are going to be days where John and Carla are dead on, and then there are also going to be days where, you know, they're wrong, and they would be the first to admit that. John, in particular, has said, you know, on several episodes, he said, you know, I may be wrong about this, and I hope I am, but this is what I'm seeing, and, you know, so it's kind of a sticky situation there to really try and, you know, implicate somebody, you know, unless you have more concrete, solid evidence.
Patrick, you know, based on the case that Dave gave you, this is Tim, by the way, it sounds to me like you need to drop a psychic and get Underdog, because he just gave you Polly Purebred and Simon Barsinister.
Right.
Yes, but, you know, right now, Underdog's really tired because he forgot to fill his ring with the energy.
That's right, man.
Energy
pill. Yeah, so. Underdog is a druggie.
Yes,
he was. All along. What sort of message does that send to kids?
Well, you know, it says that if you take your vitamins and you're a good guy,
yeah,
you know, and polish people's shoes, you too can be a superhero.
Yeah,
don't mess with me. That's one of the only tattoos I have is my Underdog tattoo. All right, Patrick? All right.
Vitamins that are controlled by the FDA.
That's right. So you've got these cases going on. Now, has there ever been, are you aware of any cases that are closed because of help? Now, I know we watch the TV show Medium, and
sure,
Alison Dubois every week saves the day by giving these cases, and they figure out a unique way to circumvent the they find a way to circumcise the evidence. No, but they find a way around it that they could nail these people. How are you familiar with real cases actually taking place that way? We put out the call to Alison Dubois to be on the show, and of course, at this point, she's a little too busy with the show and everything they're doing. We haven't gotten a call back.
Absolutely. Haunting Evidence was built from the ground up as a companion program to Court TV's other psychic abilities program called Psychic Detectives.
Right.
Now, the primary difference between Psychic Detectives and Haunting Evidence is that Psychic Detectives is entirely reenactments. These are known cases that were aided with the that were closed rather with the aid of a psychic investigator or a psychic profiler or a medium or what have you. Went into these cases, gave law enforcement clues that aided them in closing the case. So, in the span of 30 minutes, everybody, you know, we go to case closed, and this is who did it, and this is the amazing evidence that the psychic came up with that parallels what law enforcement discovered. And the difference with haunting evidence is these are actual, they're still very much cold cases, and we take the viewer in to the actual investigation. It's literally the first brush that the psychics have with these cases, taking them to the different crime scenes and whatnot. So it's easy, I think, to compare us to psychic detectives and say, you know, what the heck is going on? You know, why isn't there any closure here? You're leaving us hanging. And that is one of the unfortunate things about haunting evidence is most of these episodes, I fear, are going to be cliffhangers. But sooner or later, I'm hoping that we will get some resolution in a couple of them. But if people want to see cases that have actually been closed with the aid of psychics, watch our companion program, Psychic Detectives, on Core TV. I believe it's on Wednesdays at 10 p.m.
Now, let me ask you this, too. With all of the stuff that's going on with you guys trying to open these cold cases, are you aware, have you or any of the other members of Haunting Evidence received some nasty emails or mails from people saying, you better get off our back, stop coming after us, anything like that?
Yeah, that's one of the fortunate things. Myself being the paranormal investigator on the show, I'm just looking for changes in the environmental variables and taking some photos, hoping to get something to sort of cooperate with John and Carlos to sort of complement their interpretation and say they're on the right track. While they were feeling this, we were measuring this activity. Maybe it was a sign from the other side that something was trying to nudge us that we were on the right path at that moment. I have been told that at least one of the other members of the cast has been threatened in at least one of the cases. There was another case that we did earlier this year where the perpetrator is believed to still live near where the victim did, and while we were filming, the victim's family told us later on off camera that we were being watched by who they believed did this crime.
Really?
Obviously, I can't tell you who this was, but yeah, we were being observed by somebody going up and down the road very slowly on a four-wheel ATV. And it was when we found that out. That was
maybe he just
chilling.
Thought you were really cute, Patrick. You are a good-looking man. It's
Well, thank you very much, Dave.
Tim cruises by your place all the time, watching you.
What's that?
Sorry,
you're not supposed to tell.
Anyway,
him that.
You're right.
So you've had these little experiences, but nobody is. I mean, there are thankfully no real death threats or problems from.
No, not not yet. Knock on wood. I will say this: the second case that we filmed was Tara Baker. She was the University of Georgia law student who was murdered in her apartment in Athens, Georgia, which is less than 45 minutes from where I live. And I was actually the one that brought the case to Court TV's attention after my friend Sherry had, who worked for the Baker family, had sort of tipped me off to it as well. So that one was a little unnerving for myself. I was like, what if I'm just down the street? What if this guy decides to, come pay me a visit? But so far,
so maybe
good.
That's the one episode. If I'm the paranormal investigator, I go, gee, I'm getting nothing.
Yeah.
Sorry, can't help you.
Right. Exactly.
Sometimes you can't always be the hero, Patrick. Just remember that.
What's actually
interesting is I wish we had a John Oliver with us at the last Stanley retreat.
Yeah.
And I say this gingerly, and I won't go into detail, so please don't bother emailing me and asking me for more. But I believe I was introduced to JonBenet Ramsey's murderer while we were
really?
There. Yeah, because it was shortly after my introduction to this person that one of the Boulder County police people that were at the event, actually weren't even there for our event, but were there just visiting, noticed him and asked what we were talking about, and then he clued me in on who this guy was, and
This was somebody who was attending the
No,
the
he Stanley. Wasn't. He wasn't one of our guests. He just happened to be at the Stanley and is interested in the paranormal himself. How strange is that?
Yeah.
You know, again, it could just be stories. It could just be they're just trying to freak me out. However, I thought it was pretty interesting, and
it just
shows to go you. You just don't know who you're running into out there. But yeah, it would have been interesting to see if this was one of those moments because
absolutely.
You know, afterwards.
Well, John has told me that he doesn't get involved in cases unless he is approached by law enforcement. A lot of psychics are contacted by family members after someone has died or gone missing. And John has a very interesting answer for that, and I won't say too much about it because I'll let him elaborate if you manage to get him on the show at another point. But he has said that...
Sure, rub it in my nose that I can't get him on the show. Nice job, Patrick.
Well, I'll see what I can do.
Had you been able to manage to get him on.
Right. But he said that he won't do it for virtue of the fact, what if the family contacts me and it's the father who's guilty? And I know this. How can I, figure this guy as the guilty party and, not upset the family, rightfully so. So he's told me that he only gets involved in these cases when he's contacted by law enforcement.
That's interesting, yeah, because that actually would have been one of the main questions I would have asked. I think we even asked Carla that when we had her on.
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Patrick Burns. Patrick, aside from doing the TV show, you also host something called Ghost Stock, which is not unlike Woodstock, where you all get together, smoke a lot of weed, and check
absolutely.
Out ghosts.
Absolutely, man. You wouldn't believe the ghosts we catch dropping acid.
Oh, I bet.
You know.
I hear ghosts get the best weed, too. Is that true?
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent.
We got Jimi Hendrix there, and John Lennon is going to be checking in now.
Little Janis Joplin?
Yeah, Janis is excellent. There, too. Yep. No, seriously, Ghost Stock is a paranormal conference that we do in Savannah, Georgia.
There's some bad ectoplasm being passed around Ghost Stock.
Right.
Don't take the ectoplasm.
Don't take the brown ectoplasm.
That's right.
It's really bad, man. I had a bad trip last night, dude.
So, no, it's actually in Savannah. You have, it's a group, a gathering.
Yeah. It's our little spirited weekend of spirits, as we call it. And Savannah, Georgia is just an amazing town. It's really one of the very few towns in the South that was spared General Sherman's torch during his march to the sea during the Civil War. So it's really, from a historical perspective, if you're a history buff, Savannah is Southern history personified. It's just an amazing town. And we do this twice a year. We're rolling into Ghost Stock 4 now, which will be held February 1st through the 4th in Savannah, and we're actually upgrading to a larger hotel to expand and accommodate more guests for this incarnation of the event. But it's a lot of fun. We have speakers, and we go on investigations, and we review evidence when we go out to do these investigations. Everybody comes back and reports on what they found, and people that are interested in going, that we've piqued their curiosity, they can go to GhostStock. That's GhostOck.com, and read up on it there. We're expanding the guest list right now, but
I heard you might even have that dynamic ball duo from that crazy radio show, Darkness on the Edge of Town, showing up at your...
It's a very distinct possibility.
Very cool. Well, I hope they show up because I hear they're really cool in person.
I do, too. I can't wait to meet them.
And of course, we're talking about the, beautiful people from Ghostly Talk, right? Is that...
Yeah.
No, sorry. So you're going to have this out. Now, do you know who some of the speakers are that you currently have lined up?
Our very good friend, mutual friend, Dave, Russ Clark, is going to be there.
Okay, great.
Yep, he has signed on for the event.
I hear he gets good drugs too. So
that's what I hear. I'm hoping he does. I'm hoping he hooks us up.
I wonder if he could just hypnotize us to think we're on good drugs.
Yeah,
that might be the better way to go.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, so you're going to have Russ out there talking about hypnosis and the paranormal.
Russ is going to be there. John B. Kachuba, who is...
We've had John on the show, sure, yeah.
Right, he's author of a book, Ghost Hunting on the Trail of Mediums, Dowsers, Spirit Seekers, and Other Investigators of America's Paranormal World. What a mouthful that is. But that is right. That's his book, and he's going to be talking about it and have autographed copies for sale there as well. James Caskey, who runs Cobblestone Tours out of Savannah, one of the top haunted tour companies in Savannah. They do a great haunted pub crawl. And after about your fourth or fifth round, I guarantee you, you're going to see some spirits.
Yeah, you'll definitely be crawling from pub, won't you?
Exactly. Yes, yes, it's aptly named. Some guy named Patrick Burns is going to be running his mouth about something long-winded.
He's on, like, one of those cooking shows, isn't he?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's on Food Network. And our favorite guest, he's coming back for, this is going to be the third time we've had him there, is Murray Silver. He's a fifth-generation Savannian. He was booking rock concerts in Atlanta when he was 16 years old back in the 1960s.
Wow.
You know, at the time when everybody was getting their driver's license, he was like bringing supergroups like Pink Floyd, Genesis, Paul McCartney, George Harrison, Bob Dylan. These supergroups of the 70s, he was bringing them into Atlanta with the aid of his father and booking rock concerts. He was also the tour photographer for the Sex Pistols during their only tour of America in 1977. I mean, how cool is that?
Very cool.
I'm just blown away. I'm starting.
You do know that this isn't a rock and roll meeting, though, right? What does he do with the paranormal?
Absolutely, absolutely. He's had a number of experiences with the paranormal himself. I mean, living in Savannah, there's no way to get around that. And
sure.
He's written a book on ghosts called Behind the Moss Curtain. He's just an all-around amazing, amazing guy. And like I said, fifth-generation Savannian. If anybody's going to be able to tell you about Savannah's ghosts, it's going to be him. And he just mesmerizes the crowd every time. Everybody's like, bring back Murray again. So we're bringing him back for the third time.
Awesome.
And we're also adding some other guests. We've got some people that have expressed interest in attending that haven't confirmed yet, but... we're close to getting that wrapped up, so I'm not gonna say anything until it's a done deal. But all I can tell your listeners is to keep checking ghoststock.com and click on the featured guest link to find out who's been added and who's in for the lineup.
Excellent. And yeah, like I said, Tim and I are doing our best to hopefully get out there and attend with you. And if you need a couple more speakers,
absolutely,
we'll help you find them.
Absolutely.
We'll be doing that. Now, let's talk a little bit more, too, about your personal experiences in the paranormal. Now, you're quite busy with the show and Ghost Doc and your real job in real life. And are you still doing paranormal investigating yourself, aside from the show and, you know, and doing that?
Yes, I am.
Involved? Okay.
Yes, I am, actually. I don't get to get out there as often as I would like. You know, of course, I'm married. I have two small boys, and my wife is interested in this as well, and... she's not always really crazy about playing babysitter while Patrick gets to go out and chase spooks around. So we typically try to find a babysitter.
Women can be so ununderstanding about that.
Totally, you know?
And my wife with six kids just doesn't understand why she shouldn't stay home with the kids.
Right, yeah.
I get a lot of crap for that. She'll be coming along with me on some more of these trips, I believe, in the future here. But no, I'm with you on it. Yeah, that's got to be tough having kids. I understand. We go through the same thing at our house because I am tied up doing so much of this stuff. I've only been out on a couple of small expeditions for ghost hunting out here. But are you still doing them? I mean, if people have problems or troubles out in their area, can they contact you for help?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we approach each case on a you know, per incident basis. And if we deem that, you know, an investigation is in order, then, you know, I typically try to assemble a team and send them out. I don't personally go on every investigation these days. I've sort of encouraged the ghost hounds to, you know, organize their own investigations and get out there and just come back and report back. And but I do try to get out at least once a month, if not more. But you know, with my shooting schedule and everything else going on, sometimes it's a little tough. It probably averages, I think, to be about once every 2 months.
Well, how about with the paranormal investigating that you're currently doing? Has there been a new case that's really kind of knocked you off your heels and made you think, oh, my God, what's this?
In terms of places that I'd like to investigate, you mean?
No, I mean, what kind of evidence have you collected, you know, since you started the show, still doing the paranormal?
Oh.
Is there anything that just really kind of went, wow, holy crap, this is unreal?
Yeah, this last case that we did was very interesting. We investigated a cold case in the Washington, D.C. area, and the victim's body was placed in the Potomac River and presumably drifted downstream about 10 miles from D.C. They don't really know. They're not certain where her body was placed in the water, but it was discovered on the banks of the Potomac. And, you know, we took Carla out there during the day, and she was doing her interpretations. I was taking photographs. And then at night we went back out to go near the crime scene, but they decided to charter a large boat to take us out there on the river. And they had John on the bow of the boat, and Carla's on the stern, and I'm in the whatever they call it on the boat, where the wheelhouse, where the captain sits and all the instruments. I've got my table set up there with my rig, and you know, I'm thinking, gosh, you know, we're out in the middle of the water. I don't know if we're going to actually get anything.
Right.
And my sensors were doing some crazy stuff on this one. I couldn't explain it. As we came into the location, we drifted up and down stream over about a 500-yard patch of the river. And normally, I have a barometric pressure sensor is one of the probes that I use on my rig. And I'm not so much interested in detecting any paranormal activity with that. What I'm more interested in is, do we get a higher incidence of paranormal activity, say, on the edge of a front, when a cold front or a warm front is moving in,
sure,
and the barometric pressure goes up or down accordingly, is there more paranormal activity going on? And, you know, being able to chart this, we would be able to look back at the graph and say, okay, this is the exact, here's the edge of the front as it's rolling in, and the air pressure starts to drop. I noticed that the barometric pressure sensor was dropping after about 20-25 minutes into our session, and I thought, oh, that's interesting.
Right.
It's never really done anything before. It looks like we're in for a change in the weather. And the captain of the boat said, no, actually, according to the weather forecast for tonight, we're supposed to be calm. I said, okay, that's a little odd. And we watched the bare pressure just keep dropping, and then it baselined again. It leveled out for about 10 minutes or so, and then it started to rise. It started to go back up. Baselined out again, started to fall again. I mean, even the captain of the boat had never seen anything like this before.
Well, you know, couldn't that be, though, as you're just going over the hills and valleys under the water?
Yeah.
That it was absolutely picking up the pressure from the you know, because I've gone out fishing with my in-law, you know, my father-in-law, and he'll drop that little fish depth finder.
Well, this
thing
was at the surface. This is the actual barometric.
Right, I know that, but I'm just wondering if the barometric pressure was able to tell the difference as you were floating over different depths of water.
Almost like a depth finder.
Yeah, because,
interesting.
Because
interesting.
As it got deeper, I wonder if that would change the barometric pressure, and as the water got more shallow.
Yeah, I don't know if that would, if what is underneath the water would affect the bare pressure on the surface of the water.
Well, you'd almost
question.
Think so, because if the water, there's more volume in a deeper pit, but the water is still pretty level across the top.
I see what you're saying. Right.
I wonder if that pressure from there, because they've shown and they believe that one of the main things that happens at the Bermuda Triangle is it's actually like gas bubbles being emitted from the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
And when it comes up, it's kind of like a supersonic burp, and it kind of pulls stuff down and knocks off their deal. I'm wondering if that kind of pressure and that kind of stuff is being gauged while you're, because how many times have you gone out in a boat with the
This is the first time, and
right.
you have a very, very, you bring up a very interesting point. That's very good. I did have the captain actually lock down the coordinates of this location with his GPS.
Okay.
So maybe at some point in the future, you know, maybe I'll fund my own little expedition out there to the Potomac River, and we'll revisit this location and put your theory to the test, Dave.
You know, you probably wouldn't even have to do that if you just went out and got one of the depth finders on a boat for fish depth finders, and then you can kind of see when the bottom's dropping out and see if your barometric pressure is dropping. You wouldn't even have to do an expensive one. You know, Tim and I will come out and we'll rent the boat and go fishing for a weekend with you.
Absolutely. Let's do it.
As long as you do the rowing, because Tim and I are lazy, lazy men.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So.
We'll wait until the spring. I'll come up there to Minnesota, land of 10,000 lakes, and we'll we'll go bass fishing, Dave.
Awesome. Sounds like a plan. Now let me. So I don't mean to steal your thunder on that. So doing these changes, did John and Carla feel anything out there?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. They usually pick up on something when we're doing a reading or doing a session at a location. My instruments don't always act up, though. You know, that's just the nature of paranormal investigation. Is if you're looking for tangible data that you can log, you don't get it in every location. So,
okay.
They were definitely picking up on something. John had put forth an interesting theory, because it wasn't just the bare pressure that was going up and down. Magnetic fields were in flux in ways like I have never seen them before, doing sort of the same thing. It would baseline, drop off, baseline, rise, and baseline again. And John had proposed the possibility that, you know, if you believe in the theory of ley lines, you know, I'm sure you know all about ley lines.
Right.
He felt we may have actually encountered a ley line out there on the middle of the Potomac River.
And why don't you, just so the listeners have a better handle on it, because I don't want to speak out of turn. I have a general working of what ley lines are, but why don't you give the benefit of the doubt to the listener that they may not be as familiar with it, and help educate me a little more on it, too.
Sure. The most famous ley line is of course, supposed to be the Bermuda Triangle, and this is just areas where lines of energy, like you have lines of force with the magnetic field of the Earth going from magnetic north to magnetic south. Well, there are also other lines of energy that sort of crisscross in different patterns. And when these lines cross in certain areas, you get a hot spot, which they refer to as a ley line.
Right.
At least that's the theory as I understand it.
It's like triangulation. So all these things are crossing, and where they cross, that point is where all hell breaks loose.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
So
that's the theory anyway.
Well, so you're able to pick that up on this. Is that going to be shown on the episode then, hopefully?
Oh, I'm sure. I'm absolutely certain of it.
But I was also asking, though, still doing the personal investigations, what do you feel in the last 2 years has been the best bit of evidence that you've gotten on your own that's not part of the show? That, I mean, while you're out investigating in Georgia, is there something that just really took you off and knocked you off your socks going, holy crap, that's amazing?
Yeah, boy, we had some crazy stuff going on at Ghost Stock 2,
right?
Which was last January in Savannah. We were staying in it's an old boarding house that dates back to the Civil War era. They did like an $11 million renovation on it in, I think, 1998, and it's now, you know, a beautiful 4 or 5 star hotel.
Right.
Right there in the heart of Savannah's shopping district. And, you know, we've heard all the stories about this place and the activity that was going on. I mean, we would hear children running up and down the halls of the hotel during the night, and, you know, peek your head outside the window and there's nobody there. And this has been reported from guests time and time again. I guess Alec Baldwin was staying there, and he's actually friends with Murray Silver, and he was telling Murray a funny instance about when he was staying at the hotel. He said, I heard these kids running up and down the halls all night, and I called the front desk, and I said, who are these kids, and where are their parents? And they said, well, Mr. Baldwin, unfortunately, the children's parents are dead, and so are they. And
wow.
Yeah, it was... was pretty interesting. Savannah is just, it's so amazing, because every other storefront, and this really isn't an exaggeration, I mean, every other location you walk into has a ghost story, and it's just a matter of fact to these people. You know, it's not even like they blush or, you know, look at you funny, like, you know, are you going to believe me if I tell you this? They're like, yeah, we have a ghost, we call him George. And he does this, and he opens the doors, and just about every night at 6 o'clock, you'll hear him walking up the steps, you know, and they just say it so matter-of-fact that it's just fascinating. And, you know, it's a great place to just go and you know, collect these stories. I mean, you could write probably 3 or 4 books on the ghosts of Savannah alone, I think.
Let me ask you this. This is a question, as we're talking about this, it just kind of hits me, and I know it's probably going to come out sounding really stupid as I'm saying it, but you know, I'm interested in knowing about this. With residual hauntings, they always seem to happen at the same time, at the same date, either every night at 6 o'clock when Grandma would come downstairs to, you know, make herself some tea. We hear the stairs creak and so on and so forth. Now, have you, this is a two-part, have you done a lot of investigations of residual hauntings?
I have done some.
Okay. Now, my other question would be, do they, and this is the part that's going to sound really queer, but do they coincide with daylight savings time? If every night at 6, I don't mean that sarcastically, but I mean if every night at 6, Grandma came down.
Absolutely.
When the clock flips during that time of year, does it match up?
Right. That's a very good question. In terms of the residual hauntings that I have looked into, they've lacked that all-important repeatability factor. You know, it's still kind of a chaotic event. Okay, they report it happening every day at such and such, and then it's nearly every day. Yeah, I guess it happens about every, maybe two or three times a week. So it's like, as you investigate, as you go into it more and more and you get people to talk about it more and more, it's not quite the event that reproduces, like a clockwork.
Well, of course, because if it was that clockwork, people would be, you know, news stations from around the world would have picked that story up by now.
Absolutely.
And been at the recording.
That's very interesting. You know, you talk about, like, the anniversary of certain events, you know, a traumatic event, you know, maybe a murder occurred at a location on such and such a day. Okay, are they going by the day on the calendar, or are they going by the day of the week? You know, it was the third Saturday of December, or you know, it was the 23rd of September. You know, that changes. I'm very curious about that as well. I don't know if there's anything to anniversaries with residual hauntings, or if it's just a nostalgic kind of thing for the ghost hunter. You know,
too, because you'd think that same effect would happen. Oh yeah, every night, every year on the anniversary of their death, you can hear them, you know, cry out or something like that. What happens on a leap year?
Yeah, exactly.
Does it have that effect? You know, I mean, that's interesting because it throws things off, right?
Right. Well, you know, also I think. In terms of these anniversaries, you have investigators that are specifically keen in on those dates.
Right.
They may get this activity at other times of the year as well.
Right.
But they'll key in on that date and watch it like a cat on the anniversary. And of course, they may actually pick up something and say, "Hey, isn't this cool? This happened actually on the anniversary of this event." So.
Good evening, everybody, and happy holidays coming up here soon. I'd like to wish you and all of yours a very healthy, happy, safe holiday. We hope you'll all be back with us after the holidays, listening to the shows, and being safe. Remember, this is a crazy time of year for travel. Be careful when you're out driving. Be aware. Remember to take some time with the family. They are very important to you, and if you make your time with your family now, love them. Don't leave anything out there hanging. There's no need for talking to people like John Edward. As John Edward is so kind and fond of saying at the end of his show, if you do your job in this life of talking to the people that mean the most to you, you don't have to use somebody like John Edward to talk to him in the afterlife to make amends and to fix things. I only mention that just because we do take things for granted, and this is the time of year for a fresh start and renewal and time to mend bridges and be with friends and family, and we just wish you all the best for the next year. Our guest this evening is Mr. Patrick Burns, and now that we're all feeling warm and fuzzy and sipping our cocoa, we'll go back to Patrick here on the lines with us. Patrick, so we've got Ghost Stock coming up again. Give the dates for Ghost Stock.
That's February 1st through the 4th in lovely Savannah, Georgia.
Okay, and for information, people can go?
To Ghost Stock, GHOSTOCK.com.
And if people are interested in talking to you or getting help in Georgia, where can they look up information on Patrick Burns?
That is on Ghost Hounds, GHOSTHOUNDS.com.
Did you think that, you know, when you came up with that term, did you realize how close to it sounding like ghost towns?
Oh, yeah. We get that a lot, too.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But it is at ghosthounds.com.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I know. It's difficult to sort of roll it off your tongue.
You ain't nothing but a ghost hound.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly.
Crying all the time. Yeah. All right. So you can go to ghosthounds.com. As a matter of fact, every Sunday night, If you listen to the show live on Sunday nights, you can go to ghosthounds.com and click on their chat board, and you can go in there and talk with other fans of our show and share and spend some time.
Investigators.
That's right,
channel.
Para Investigators channel.
Yep.
So that's available.
Right,
yep, good deal. And then also now, for people that are interested in getting more information about the TV show Haunting Evidence, since it's going to be a while before it's back on the air, where can they go look up information on that?
It's courttv.com/haunting.
Okay.
And they can actually view the web premiere of the very first episode that aired last June right there on the Court TV website if they've never seen the program and they'd like to get an idea of what it's all about.
And did you say there was also hauntingevidence.com?
Hauntingevidence.com, yeah. Basically, it's a redirect. It's the same,
okay.
Same thing,
right.
Yeah.
And then MySpace, that you've got a page up on MySpace people can contact
you.
I do,
as does everyone these days.
That's
everyone
right.
And their mother.
How can people add you there?
That's myspace.com/ghostgeek.
Ghost Geek.
G-E-E-K.
Okay. And yep. You'll be able to find them there. Otherwise, if you go to darknessradio.com, we have a link on there for our MySpace page. Click on that link, and it will take you to my page here. And if you go into my top friends, I've got Patrick Burns up there, so you can connect with Patrick that way as well. Patrick, let's talk a little bit about a couple other things. Now, first off, I wanted to mention something to you. And, you know, I'm certainly not trying to get John or Carla off the show, but there's a really interesting medium, psychic, sensitive, whatever you want to call him, that we had on our show, and he's going to be with us at the Queen Mary. His name is Peter James.
Yeah.
Peter claims most hauntings, he believes most spirits stay where they were killed or where they died.
Yep.
That would be interesting. He claims that he can speak to them there. I would think maybe you guys should have him on your show in the future to see if he picks up on something right there.
It would be very interesting. And I subscribe to that theory as well, the difference between spirits and ghosts, of course. A ghost being someone who is stuck in between this life and the next life, and a free spirit being someone who has crossed over and can come back.
But you believe that if it's a ghost stuck here, it's probably stuck at the point of death?
Yeah, in most instances, I think. But I'm not totally sold on that. I believe that they may be stuck here, and maybe they're stuck following around a specific person. You know, if they have unfinished business in this life that they were not able to complete. Maybe they follow around a particular person. Maybe they're staying behind because they want to be there for their children in some capacity.
Sure.
And so they sort of hang around them. I believe Hans Holzer was the one who sort of first came out with that theory, in that the ghost is actually, there's a difference between the ghost and the spirit. The ghost is stuck here because of unfinished business, because, you know, maybe in some instances they don't even realize that they're dead. They died in such a quick, traumatic manner that they're sort of wandering around in an ethereal daze. And then I think, you know, maybe some of them stick around out of fear of being judged. You know, what's behind door number two? I don't necessarily want to be damned to hell, so I'll stick around here with what I know, what's familiar, and they sort of
damn you to hell, Patrick Burns. Damn you to hell.
That's it.
Get off my yard, you little punk. So so you believe that could be it? All right. Well, that's a good theory. I want to ask you, and you don't have to be a tough guy now, Patrick. We're all friends.
Oh, here it comes.
Nobody
here
listens comes. To the show. Have you ever really just been scared crapless doing an investigation?
Totally. Totally.
Okay.
I was dude run like years before Brian on Ghost Hunters Buzz. There is a video clip out there someplace, and I'm doing my very best to track down all remaining copies and destroy them.
Is that the one with you and Tommy Lee on the boat?
Yeah. No, this is another one.
Okay. Sorry.
That one I've already gotten that one all taken care of.
Is it that Hot Nights in Atlanta video with Paris Hilton?
Yeah.
Excellent.
That's a Loch Ness.
Come on, man, you're undermining me. Okay?
It wouldn't be so bad, but they have the footage of you dressed as the cheerleader.
Right.
Okay, so, no, go
there's
ahead.
There's the video of me hightailing it out of the restroom at Anthony's restaurant here in Atlanta. We were there with CNN a couple of years ago, and they were hearing the toilet paper roll spinning on its own in the ladies' restroom. Of course, the restroom was closed, And they had a video camera set up in there, and they're like, Patrick, you got to go in there and check this. And thank goodness the CNN camera guy had already left. And I walk in there, and you can see me walk in on the video camera, and I sit down in a chair across from the stalls. And no sooner had I sat down than, sure enough, you hear the toilet paper go tick 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 tick. And, man, I just, it's like in the old cartoons, you know, when you run through the wall and there's that outline.
That's right.
I mean, I swear to God, that's sort of what I did. I made a straight line for the door, and I uttered out a few expletives and.
Excellent. Well, we're going to look for that.
My whole team.
I want you to know we are going to try to play that on the air as soon as we can find it on YouTube. So it will be a part of our site. Patrick is going to be cool enough to join us at the Queen Mary event 14th through the 17th of January, and also at the Stanley event when we return to the Stanley for our Rest in Pieces return tour. And that is going to be March 29th, 30th, and 31st. And I'll tell you what, Patrick, that was crazy cool. I don't know yet. I haven't been to the Queen Mary. I'm really hyped about it, expecting a lot. But
right.
The Stanley was amazing. And
that's
what
everybody's
fun.
Telling me, man. So, I'm stoked about both of the trips.
Right. So now the Queen Mary, though, that's coming up. That's going to be interesting. You're going to do a talk there for us. Kind of give us a little bit of your history and share some of your evidence that you've collected over the years.
Yeah, and I may even have that video of me hightailing it out of the bathroom. I may show that.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, Patrick, if there's anything else that you've got coming up, let us know now.
That's pretty much it, Dave.
All right, we pretty much covered all of it for you.
I think that's it for
great.
Up through like February or March.
Well,
so.
Patrick, thanks again for joining us. You're a real true gentleman. We appreciate having you on the show with us. Let us know as changes are coming in. Let's talk after season two kicks off for you again.
Sounds good.
Is it going to be more than 9 episodes, or are you guys shooting another 9?
Yeah, we're doing actually 13 for this one.
Fantastic. Well, congratulations and continued success with the show Haunting Evidence. Keep watching and set it on your TiVo. It'll begin again in June. They'll probably start rerunning the old shows. Our guest this evening was Mr. Patrick Burns from the TV show Haunting Evidence. You can check out his information about his upcoming paranormal event at ghostdoc.com. That's ghostock.com. Or you can go to his website at ghosthounds.com, ghosthounds.com. We'd also like to thank Adam Bly, our guest from the first hour. And we want to make sure that if you didn't hear the first hour, we had the lovely Lisa Dualaby from the TV show Ghost Hunters on. And Lisa, Donna LaCroix, and Paula Donovan have put together a Divas of Darkness calendar to benefit breast cancer. Go to divasofdarkness.net. to get the information and order your calendar to help breast cancer awareness. Thank you very much for tuning into The Darkness on the Edge of Town. Have a happy holiday, and we'll be back with you again next week.
We hope you enjoyed today's show with demonologist Adam Bly and paranormal investigator Patrick Burns. Tomorrow, on tomorrow's show, it's paranormal investigator Chris Fleming, who's a part of a show over in England, and he's teamed up with Zach Baggins. We'll be talking about the paranormal side of animals. That's coming up tomorrow with Chris Fleming. Of course, animals are a huge, huge passion of Chris's, and we'll get into that tomorrow. That'll be here on Beyond the Darkness. For Dave Schrader, I'm Tim Dennis. Enjoy your Throwback Thursday, everybody, and we'll see you tomorrow right here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18+. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Chances are, you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your social security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info, and if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
This Labor Day, say goodbye to spills, stains, and overpriced furniture with WashableSofas.com. Featuring Anabay, the only machine washable sofa inside and out, where designer quality meets budget-friendly pricing. Sofas start at just $6.99, making it the perfect time to upgrade your space. Anabay's pet-friendly, stain-resistant, and interchangeable slipcovers are made with high-performance fabric built for real life. You'll love the cloud-like comfort of hypoallergenic, high-resilience foam that never needs fluffing, and a durable steel frame that stands the test of time. With modular pieces, you can rearrange any time. It's a sofa that adapts to your life. Now through Labor Day, get up to 60% off site-wide at washablesofas.com. Every order comes with a 30-day satisfaction guarantee. If you're not in love, send it back for a full refund. No return shipping, no restocking fees, every penny back. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.